is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story, behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. But, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for a few minutes. We have with us Dr. Kathy Burns, and we're going to be talking about her book, Masonic and Occult Symbols Illustrated. And, you know, what most people don't understand is that there really are people out there who come from the dark side. Some of them are Satanists. Some of them are witches. Some of them are deeply involved in the occult and the various occult and secret societies. Now, the secret societies exist because they're secret and people don't know they exist. But they always have left their symbols and their signs down through the ages. And if you read the book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall, and he was a Satanist, and he was one of the world's leading Satanists, but of course he bragged about how they always fooled stupid people like you and your friends because they couldn't recognize these symbols. And you see them on the back of the dollar bill. You see the eagle there. Of course, initially it was a phoenix. It wasn't an eagle. And, of course, the figure 13 is very, very deeply involved in everything on the back of the dollar bill. And, of course, the symbol of the pyramid with the all-seeing eye, the glorified eye above, the Masonic eye of the secret societies that has been around for almost 6,000 years. And yet, nobody ever bothers to ask, what is the symbol of the secret societies doing on the back of the dollar bill? Well, certainly Dr. Kathy Burns has done a wonderful job with her book, Masonic and Occult Symbols Illustrated. Dr. Burns, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you again for the privilege.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this. Now, you've actually got 728 different illustrations in this book. This must have been an awfully difficult book to read because there's so many different symbols out here. We see them every day, and nobody recognizes them.
It was a lot of study going into it, but again, I use everybody's, or not everybody's, but I use their own quotes to tell us what these symbols meant. When I put a logo in my book, I'll say, now this is what the Theosophical Society tells us this logo means. When I use it with Masonry, I'll say, now the Masons say this. For instance, like the LCNI you're talking about, that's one of the most prominent symbols in Masonry. And you'll see it almost everywhere. You can turn on your TV or whatever, and you always see it. But I go to the Masonic or occult forces, and I get their own quotes. Now, for instance, like the eye in Masonry, they tell us that it is actually a representation of Osiris. Pike says this right out. He said, the emblem of Osiris the Creator is that LCNI. And then he states this, quote, Osiris's tower was symbolized by an eye over a scepter. The sun was termed by the Greeks the eye of Jupiter and the eye of the world, and his, now that's meaning Osiris's, his is the all-seeing eye in our lodges, unquote. I think that's quite clear. He's telling us who that eye represents. It's not the god that the so-called Christian Mason thinks it is. It is actually Osiris. Then another Masonic author is Carl Quadi, and he says this. He says, quote, this is one of the oldest and most widespread symbols denoting God. We find it in Egypt, in India. The open eye of Egypt represented Osiris. In India, Shiva is represented by an eye, unquote. Now, the right eye actually represents Osiris, which would be the male. The left eye represents Isis, which would be the female. And then there's sometimes this single eye, which is neither really right nor left, and that represents the Horus hawk or the Elysian eye from Egypt. And I think it's also important to understand who Osiris really is, because if this is what is being represented by this eye, we really need to know who he is. Actually, he was a god, supposedly a god of Egypt. He committed incest with his sister Isis, and that resulted in the birth of a Horus. And again, we go back to Pike, and he says, Osiris was the image of generative power. Now, Osiris was the Egyptian god of the dead as well as the sun god. Now, we need to remember that the Bible tells us that the Christian's God is not the god of the dead, but of the living. You can find that in Matthew 22 and Mark 12 and Luke 20. The symbolic sign for Osiris and the sun is also the point within the circle. and that is the phallic symbol, and you often see that as very popular and very well used in masonry. Again, going back to Pike, he tells us about the two divinities referring to Isis and Osiris. He says they were the active and passive principles of the universe. They were commonly symbolized by the generative parts of man and woman. The Indian lingam was the union of both, as were the boat and nas and the point within a circle, all of which expressed the same philosophical idea as to the union of the two great causes of nature, which concur one actively and the other passively in the generation of all beings. That's the end of his quote. And then there's a book called Signs and Symbols of Primordial Man. And we find there that this point within the circle is actually an equivalent for the eye, and the two are co-types. So this all-seeing eye, then, really has this phallic symbolism behind it, as well as the point within the circle. But in spite of this, there's a short talk bulletin, which is put out by the Masonic Research Association, Masonic Service Association, and they are given to the lodges to be read in the lodges to the Masons. And in this bulletin called the all-seeing eye, it says this, quote, "The all-seeing eye is to Freemasons the cherished symbol. Therefore, the thinking Freemason has reverence for this symbol," unquote. Another occultist, Robert Hieronymus, he says the single eye alone or in a triangle was used extensively by Freemasons and other secret societies.
Well, of course, really this has been around for a long time, even before the Masons. But, of course, the whole lore of the Masons actually comes from the mystery religions, the ancient secret societies. And of course, the next question is, what is this symbol of the ancient occult societies doing on the back of the American dollar bill? And why isn't there any outcry demanding the separation of church and state? If we can't mention the God of the Bible, why can we have a symbol of their God on our dollar bill?
That's a good question, isn't it? See, again, coming from Egypt, why would an Egyptian symbol be on the back of our dollar bill? But they put it on, and they tell us in the New Age magazine of April 1960, they bragged about that Masonic symbolism being on the back of our dollar bill, and they bragged about how the different numbers had kept adding up, 13 leaves and 13 bars and 13 feathers, and they kept bragging. But what they failed to tell us is that number 13 is a symbol of Satan. And again, see, Osiris is another name for Shiva, which in the Satanic Bible is a synonym for Satan.
All right,
we're going to have
to take a break here. And, of course, the New Age magazine Dr. Burns is referring to was a Masonic magazine, and it kept that name up until, perhaps the mid-1980s. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I just wanted to mention to you that we are asking people to seriously consider trying a new product. It's called Be Alive Royal Jelly, and I've been taking it for about 10 years now, and it's really designed to give you energy. And I'll tell you what, I seem to have enough energy to go from 6 o'clock in the morning until about 11:30 to midnight. I usually take an hour's nap along the way, but you know, I can go all day long, and, well, we've tried getting off the royal jelly and gone right back on it. It's what the queen bee eats in the hive, and she lives 6 years, and the average bee lives about 6 days. It's been used by people across the world. It's sold with a money-back guarantee. And why don't you give them a call at 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500. Order a supply, and if you're not pleased at the end of 3 months, why, of course, they'll give you your money back. So it's pretty hard to lose, but I don't think they get very many people taking their money back, because I think most people are very, very pleased with the product. I know we have been for many, many years. And then we want to mention, of course, that we sell the Robinson Homeschool curriculum. It's designed for children from kindergarten to the 12th grade. And, of course, it's all there, the lesson plans, the tests, the textbooks. The only textbooks you have to buy are the Saxon School textbooks. And, of course, the program will $199.95 for the 12 years of education. Give serious consideration to the Robinson Homeschool curriculum. If you'd like more information or to get it, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
the Anglo-American establishment, I give you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest is Dr. Kathy Burns, and of course her book, Freemasonic and Occult Symbols Illustrated. That's Masonic and Occult Symbols Illustrated, and of course it's available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, we've got Hans calling in from Ohio. Hans, did you have a question?
Yes, hello, Dr. Burns and Dr. Stan. I'd like to point out a few things about Shiva. His symbol for both the passive and the, I guess, the active component is a crescent moon with a dot in the middle. And Shiva wears a crescent moon in his hair. And the dot, the moon represents the passage of time. So he's the lord of time because of the phases of the moon. And the dot represents his wife, one of his Shakti. And Shakti is a trinity. And one of the persons in that trinity, her name is Lalita.
Okay, we've got a terrible, terrible connection, Hans. But thank you so very much for calling, and I'll ask Dr. Burns what she thinks of that. Do you know anything about what Hans is talking about?
Well, there's a lot of different symbols for Shiva. He also uses the hourglass, which is the what they call the infinity sign or the lazy eight, the eight on the side, and that means Lucifer shall live forever. He has a lot of symbols. Well, even the crescent moon, though, that goes to the crescent moon is really a symbol of Islam, or Diana is the star there. The moon goddess is a fertility symbol, so they're, you know, that would fit very well because these are phallic symbols. The point within the circle is a phallic symbol.
And for our listeners out there, you'll actually see that infinity sign. It's a figure eight, and you'll see it on the side. SBC, a telephone company, uses that, and when they come to the end of their advertisement, they say Infinity Corporation. They show you they draw out the figure eight, and they put a big SBC in the middle of it. Well, maybe they don't understand that that is a satanic symbol, or maybe somebody there simply just sort of slipped that in without their knowing of it. It's sort of like on CBS. You look down in the right lower quadrant there of the screen, and you'll see the eye. Well, of course, that's an occult symbol, too. All of these are known, of course. The occult is every place. And, of course, they hide their symbols in plain sight. You see them every day. You have no idea what it's all about.
We'll see a lot of the leaders of these corporations, too, are Masons or belong to secret societies. So, obviously, they are using their symbols and hiding the true meaning to the public, but they're letting those insiders or so-called elite people know that they're one of those that are helped to really out to change the world to their viewpoint, to one world government or whatever. And if you look on the Satanic Bible, in fact, I have a copy of that in my symbols book or a picture of it, where at the end of the nine satanic statements, there is that lazy eight, the sideways circle, or lazy eight, the sideways eight. You can actually see that right there. So they've claimed the symbol. Why are others using it? Do they know? Not necessarily, but most likely.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we're talking with Dr. Kathy Burns, and we're talking about really chapter 19 of her book, Masonic and Eastern Star Symbols. And now, of course, one of the things most people don't understand is stars. A star with a point up and the two points down is just a plain old star. But a star with the two points up and the point down is an occult star, an occult pentagram. And what does that represent, and why is that significant?
Well, actually, both of the stars, we look at the one like on our flag and say, oh, that's the good star. Well, in the occult, yes, it's the good side of the occult, but you know how that is. There's a good inside of the, or good and evil of the force, but both of them are really evil. But the five-pointed star is actually one of the main symbols in witchcraft and occultism. And it's the Celtic priests called it the witch's foot, which makes it, you know, you can see there by the name what it's supposed to be. In Britain and elsewhere in Europe, it was called the goblin's cross or the devil's sign and the wizard's star. And it was considered to be a magic charm among the people of Babylon. Now, there's a witchcraft magazine, and they say this, quote, "The five-pointed star is one of the world's oldest symbols, and it has been used in many cultures since ancient times as an amulet to bring good fortune and ward off harm. Most Wiccan, meaning witchcraft, practitioners also wear it today as a symbol of their religion," unquote. Sybil Leek was a well-known witch, and she says this, "The pentagram has always been used in ritual magic and in the witchcraft rites of healing," unquote. The pentagram is really also used for divination, the conjuration of spirits, and to summon demoniac help. In the book called Dictionary of Mysticism, we're told this, quote, "that the pentagram is considered by occultists to be the most potent means of conjuring spirits. When a single point of the star points upward, it is regarded as a sign of the good and a means to conjure benevolent spirits. When the single point points down and a pair of points are on the top, it is a sign of the evil, Satan, and is used to conjure powers of evil," unquote. Now, the pentagram is also used, like I mentioned, in calling up demons and to aid in casting of spells. It's considered to be a sacred symbol and an item of protection by both the Eastern Star members and, of course, witches. Fred and Jill Buck are from the Magi Craftsmen, and they tell us this, "The pentagram is one of the most powerful symbols for the New Age." And then there's another witchcraft magazine that's even, their title is Pentagram. Laurie Cabot is a witch, and she says this, quote, "It really isn't that difficult to distinguish the craft from Satanism. Witches wear the pentacle with the point up. Satanists reverse it with the point down," unquote. Now, when the pentagram is reversed, it's called the inverted pentagram or the satanic pentagram, and of course it's a sign for evil. It does represent Satan. It's used for the invoking evil spirits. And Spence tells us this, quote, "The pentagram was held to be the most powerful means of conjuration to practice magic, sorcery, to evoke demons and tempests in any rite," unquote. And of course, Manly Palmer Hall, he's the one that's really given us a good explanation of this. He says, quote, "The pentagram is used extensively in black magic. When used in black magic, the pentagram is called the sign of the cloven hoof or the footprint of the devil. The star with two points upward is also called the goat of Mendes because the inverted star is the same shape as a goat's head. When the upright star turns and the upper point falls to the bottom, it signifies the fall of the morning star," unquote. So here's one Mason who's really well aware of the evil connotation behind this inverted pentagram. And other Masons really know this too. But they use the one-point star up in Masonry, and they use the two-point star up. That's the symbol or the logo for the Eastern Star women. And yes, they are well aware. Not the women themselves. Many women in there have no idea what that star means. They're just told it represents God. But we have to ask again, which God? But the leaders knew what star they had chosen, and they did it intentionally.
And, of course, you have to understand that the two points at the top are the horns of the goat. The two points that go off on the side are the ears of the goat. And, of course, the chin, the star down below, is the chin of the goat. And the goat is, of course, a symbol of Satan. And if you look actually at pictures of the national capital, you'll see the Capitol building, and then you'll see the horns coming off there on either side. And, of course, the whole nation's capital was actually designed based upon the occult. But, of course, they know that. They figure that most Americans are too dumb to understand that. And even if they're told, they say, it couldn't be true.
Oh, you couldn't just do that, could you?
The occult has always been here. And it's about time that you understood that, because we're coming down now with the coming war, the coming loss of our freedom, the institution of a police state here in the United States, to the very end of freedom as we've known it. Now, of course, there's so many symbols here in this chapter that you have. And, of course, you have these very symbols. We see women will be wearing them very often. And they're a cross, but instead of the upper part of the cross being a straight, like it would be in a traditional cross, there's a loop up there. And that's an ankh. What is an ankh, and why is that significant?
Well, the ankh is a symbol of life. And there's a book called The Dictionary of Mysticism. And in there, we find that the ankh was really the symbol of life in occult tradition. It was used by the gods as an instrument for awakening the dead to new life. And then in a Masonic book, it tells us this, the crux ansata, which is another name for the ankh, so frequently observed in the hands of the statues of the old kings and gods of Egypt, was evidently both solar and phallic in signification and represented a combination of the male and female principles in nature. And then there's another book that will tell us that it's a symbol for immortality, fertility, and it's a cross with the ring at the top, and it's often used in satanic rites. Also, in the 31st degree of masonry, they put out a scene where there's a lot of Egyptian gods and a soul has died, and they're going to weigh him in the balance scales to see if he should go to live with Osiris or to go to the underworld for the time being. And there again, you can see one of those gods carrying the ankh, because like I mentioned, it's a symbol of life. It's to bring the dead back to life again. It is a very evil connotation to it, and most people, they either like the figure of it, the looks of it, or whatever, and they wear it, but they do not know that they're wearing a fertility symbol on their body, and they are attracting those type spirits to them many times.
And of course, that is the real secret. If you actually get involved in this, you will attract those demonic spirits, whether you know it or not, and of course, if you're not very careful, those spirits will possess you. And people say, oh, that couldn't happen. Let me tell you, we've had a number of people here on our programs that have been possessed and have gotten into the occult unknowingly, or they thought it was fun. But, of course, it's not fun. And, of course, your very eternal soul is at stake. Well, we have Ed and Fred both calling in here. We'll ask them to hang on until we get to our break, and then we'll get back to them in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just remind you that Christmas is coming up, and if you have children or grandchildren and you really care about them, you want to either think about getting them a Phonopoly set. Now, if they can read phonetically and read well and spell well and pronounce words, they don't need Phonopoly if they understand phonics, but if they don't, Phonics will teach them in 16 to 20 hours what, of course, it's taken the other side many years to accomplish by dumbing them down. You can counter what has been done intentionally to dumb down your children and your grandchildren. They'll learn the 40 sounds of the English language, the 12 basic rules, and with that, they can certainly compete with any college graduate as far as reading and as far as pronunciation and specifically as far as spelling. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and certainly ask for the Phonopoly set. And then, of course, we want to mention our Miracle 2 soap products. Of course, we can't make any medical claims for them, but we can tell you an awful lot of people who use them have made claims, and they seem to be very, very pleased with them. And, of course, they call me all the time, and they tell me it's helped with this or that or the other thing. All we can do is say, give it a try. And, of course, it sounds a little funny, you know, Miracle 2 products. But I will tell you, an awful lot of people have scoffed at them, have tried them, and they are our best repeat customers. So there's a soap and a moisturizing soap and a gel, and there is a lotion, and there is a neutralizer. And some people say the neutralizer helps with heartburn. It's sure a lot safer than a lot of these very expensive pills that people take. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR if you'd like to try the Miracle 2 soap products. And, of course, you're going to have to decide if they work. They certainly work for us.
Could you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. But ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-Based Education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs-Hofker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment in the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for outcome-based education. Once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest today is Dr. Kathy Burns. Her book, A Masonic and Occult Symbols Illustrated. And, of course, the book is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And right now we have, we still have Fred on the line. Anyway, hi, Fred. How are you doing?
Yeah, good afternoon. I just want to make a statement. I'm sitting here reading my father's Masonic Bible that I got years ago. And one of the things it was talking about is of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, 53 were Master Masons. You go through and you look at all of the presidents that we've had down the line, you almost have to be a Master Mason to become a president. It lists all the presidents and a history with them, and I would say if you're not a Master Mason, you're not going to make president, what it looks like to me.
Well, if you're Skull and Bones, you can get into that, but that's a parallel secret society. Certainly, we know that Gerald Ford was a Mason. We know that Ronald Reagan took a 33rd degree while he was in office. We don't know whether he was in it before that. At least he would not admit to it, but he did accept the honorary degree, and we know certainly that Lyndon Johnson was a Mason, and yeah, there have been a lot of people that have been Masons, but you have to understand that Masonry in 1776, when America was founded, was really the vehicle by which these people plotted against the crown. And Masonry at that time did not have the occult connotations that it does now. In fact, it really didn't have the occult connotations until the Illuminati came to the United States in about 1790 and infiltrated our Masonic lodges. And we have the writings, certainly from George Washington, letters he wrote in 1798, expressing his concern about the influence of the Illuminati and these other occult organizations which had infiltrated our society. And it infiltrated Masonry. But as far as your remark about getting ahead in our society, we have lists of all of the people within the hierarchy of our courts, even within the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, and we know that actually we had the almost 40% of Southern Baptist ministers were Masons. And of course, today there all the occult influence is within the substance of the Masonic movement.
It seems like I've been able to hear too that that most of your people in Congress, your men in Congress, are pretty much all Masons.
We had a list actually. I have a list 1987. At that time, I think there were 14 or 16 senators, and of course, I think there were 50. Congressmen. They didn't list them, but they listed all the senators. What was really so interesting is the reason that they didn't impeach Bill Clinton was because he was had been a demolé, and the man who made the decision was, of course, our Trent Lott, who was a 33rd degree Mason.
Oh,
Dr.
Okay.
Burns, would you like to comment on that?
Well, as far as the presidents, you have to watch what Masonic materials you read. Many of them claim presidents there that they cannot prove. If you really get down to it, I think they can only prove something like 17 presidents. But that doesn't mean that they didn't belong to other secret societies or whatever. And yes, as far as in the Congress and all today, Trent Lott's 33rd, Jesse Helms is 33rd, Strom Thurmond is 33rd. Like you mentioned, President Reagan did receive the 33rd degree while he was in office.
Don't forget the Arlen Specter.
Arlen Specter's 33rd. Byrd was 33rd. Right off, I can't think of a whole lot more, but they're there.
Right, they are, and of course they infiltrate every aspect of our society. But of course, they could be Council on Foreign Relations.
Exactly.
Council on Foreign Relations had its origin in the occult. And this is what people don't understand. There's not one organization, there are many of them. Anything else you want to say, Fred?
No, I just thought it was very interesting how it seemed like that everybody that's run this country ends up being NASA's.
Well, we've got some of these amazing lists, and people want to know how many people within the College of Cardinals come out of Masonry. And, of course, their purpose, the only reason that they would be there is to destroy the Catholic Church. Well, then, of course, why are these people in the Protestant Church and the Southern Baptist Association? To neutralize Christianity, because they realize that Christianity is the only adversary standing in the way to their world domination. Hey, thanks so much for calling, Fred.
Have a good day.
Okay, and we've got Ed calling in from Aptos. Hi, Ed. A question or comment?
Question, Dr. Stan. Kathy, I own your book, and I was wondering, can you tell me about the owl? What does that signify? And I'll take the answer off the air. The owl?
All I really know about the owl is that it's supposed to be wisdom. I don't know if there's really an occult connection to that or not.
We have a book on occultism, and it talks a lot about the owl, and of course that's the symbol of the Bohemian Grove. And they actually have, and we have actually some of the publications of the Bohemians, and they talk about it. They understand its occult significance. They don't, of course, want the public to realize that here our presidents are going up there and participating in these occult rituals with the black hoods and the candles. And if you haven't seen Alex Jones' film, you really ought to get it. He snuck in, he got them, and of course the things are, we have got a great 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. And if you want to know what really goes on there, why you want to get that 4-tape set, well, let's go to Bill calling in from Florida. Hi, Bill, how are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Doing fair. I received my Brotherhood of Darkness package today, and I wanted to thank you.
Oh, more than welcome. I hope you enjoy it.
On the topic of Freemasonry, I used to be a Freemason, and until I went to a lodge, and right after I was raised, what they call raising as
third degree.
Third degree, and went to observe it in another lodge, and being a Christian, I had this gut feeling that, you know, something wasn't right. It seemed like it was, you know, the whole thing, seeing it, the whole third degree, seemed like it was of the devil or satanic. I just didn't feel comfortable.
Well, you're pretty smart, because most Masons are good people, and they have no idea what they're into. But you're absolutely right. It is satanic, and the light you ask for during the first 3 degrees, when they say, what do you want, and you say the light, that's Lucifer. But they don't tell you that, and of course they specifically deceive people. Isn't that right, Dr. Burns?
That's right. And you know, again, you're participating. You're there with the blindfold on, partially undressed. I mean, you have your special lodge uniform on and all. You're not about ready to run away. You've already felt that point at your breast area, because they've put a sharp instrument towards you. I mean, where are you going to go? How can you get out of there? So, I mean, you're almost in total fear to start with. So you're really not comprehending what is going on during that ritual. But when you can sit back and actually see the ritual being enacted, then you can understand a little more. Now, actually, this ritual, this death, and it's a death and resurrection ceremony. And I know Masons do not like to agree to that, because resurrection has a connotation of Christianity or religion, and they don't want you to think it's a religion. But yet, if you read their books, and I've read literally hundreds of their books, and they will tell you that it is a resurrection ceremony. Now, of course, like I said, to the public, they really deny it. But really what happens during that ceremony is it symbolizes the relationship between the initiate and the god, and it makes the candidate equivalent to a divine or a godlike being. There's a Masonic author by the name of W.L. Wilmshurst, and he claims that that Master Mason, which would be the name of the third degree, quote, is no longer an ordinary man, but a divinized man, unquote. He adds, he is now Lord of himself, the true Master Mason. And, of course, this brings to mind Satan's lie to Eve in the Garden of Eden, where he told her that if she would disobey God and partake of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, she would become a god. And this is a teaching in Masonry. Again, many, many Masons have no idea. But 33rd degree Mason and occultist Manly Palmer Hall boast, man is a god in the making. Another Mason is Charles Dale, and he claims, man is like God in that he becomes a god. Masonic author George Steinmetz says, be still and know that I am God, that I am God.
And like Shirley MacLaine standing there, yes, on the beach shouting, I'm God, I'm God, I'm God. And, of course, we are divine. No, we're not divine. We're sinners saved by grace.
Right. And author Edward Waite, a well-known occultist and Mason, he says the master builder of the third degree does actually rise as Christ. So yes, that's what, so I'm very thankful that the Lord revealed this to him while he was going through that ceremony, or while he was actually viewing the ceremony. Because again, most people have no idea, and not only that, if the Mason would really think about it, that is necromancy. Because when they send them out to get this dead man, the corpse or Hiram Abiff is slain in this third degree, which is supposed to be the candidate. He is slain. He is lying there, and they send out the first degree entered apprentice to try to raise him from the dead. Well, it doesn't work because they don't have the proper grip. Then they send the second degree fellow fellow craft go out, and again, it doesn't work because they don't have the proper degree. So Solomon says, hey, I'll go down there myself, and he goes down, and he takes this corpse by the grip of the lion's paw, and he raises him, and this corpse actually utters Mahabon, which is supposed to be the lost word of masonry. That is necromancy. They are talking with the dead.
Well, there's so many incredible, incredible things there. And of course, in the funeral ceremony, they tell the Mason that he's going to stand before the great white throne of judgment. But of course, Bill, do you know what the great white throne of judgment is?
That's where every Christians stand for whatever they've done.
No. The Christian doesn't stand before the great white throne of judgment. No. Christian stands before the throne of Christ. The great white throne of judgment is the judgment of the damned, and you can look it up in the Book of Revelation.
Okay.
And I have literally read, I've read Monitors, which is supposedly the only official Masonic writing. All these other Masonic books, they try to say, no, they're not official because they know that sometimes the public gets their hands on them. But they will say the monitor for each state is official, and I have read something like 36 monitors already. I'm working on them. But in there, at most every one of those will mention the Great White Throne. There's been maybe three out of that has not mentioned it. But they tell you that the Master Mason will stand there in his apron, basically, before the Great White Throne. And when you read that, literally chills can go up your spine, because when you know the Bible, that only the damned, only the sinner will stand before the great white throne.
And you don't want to be there, Bill.
I don't worry about that. I accepted the Lord a long time ago.
God bless you. And I hope you enjoy my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because you'll recognize a lot of masonry there. God bless you, and thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got Spencer calling from Ohio, just about going to a break. Did you have a question, Spencer?
Yes, Dr. Stan and Dr. Burns. I do have your book, Dr. Burns, and I really enjoy reading it. I was wondering about the icon on top of the Capitol building. Is this the same icon that the Canaanites worship, known as the goddess of reason, Astarte, or Ishtar, that we call Miss Freedom?
I don't know, but I do know that a lot of those are goddesses. I'm not sure exactly precisely which one, but most of the time, in fact, our Capitol building is just, or the whole Capitol area, it's just filled with one goddess after another, and it just all boils down to Satan and other guys. It's a feminine guise for Satan. They have different names, like the goddesses are known as the goddesses of 10,000 names. But when it comes down to it, it's the same name, and it's Satan hiding behind the mask.
We're going to have to take a quick break. Thanks very much, Spencer. Do you want to stay on until after the break?
I got one final question.
All right, then you just hang on there.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and remember, there are two parallel forces in America. This is what everybody's lost. There was the occult force and, of course, the Christian force. And, of course, they've been competing with one another from the very inception of this country. And initially, of course, we were a Christian nation. Only, of course, in the 1930s under FDR did the occultists begin to dominate within our society. And from there on, once, of course, the Masons took over our Supreme Court in 1941, and they controlled it for 30 years, of course, they gutted the very fabric of our Christian society. So, but if you want information on that, it's, so much of it is in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. But this is the time we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And for a suggested gift of at least $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month, but you'll be helping us as we reach out now on almost 50 outlets across America every week. Some of them are only half an hour a week, but at least we have a voice. And when you join the Radio Liberty family, you become part of that voice. So seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family. And, of course, if you'd like the free copy of our newsletter, why, and you haven't had one before, we'll be glad to send you one, either the August newsletter on what really happened at Oklahoma City and the Islamic connection, which the government covered up, because, of course, if they'd let you know of Osama bin Laden's involvement in the Oklahoma City bombing and the involvement of his organization, why, in 1995, we might have done something and we wouldn't have had the World Trade Center bombing. Anyway, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Please remember our website, radioliberty.com. Please tell others.
Well, let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited, and they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated, they were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest, of course, is Dr. Kathy Burns, and we carry a number of Dr. Burns' books on the Eastern Star. We carry her book on Alcoholics Anonymous, and her book on hell, her book on Billy Graham and his friends, and what other things do we carry, Kathy?
You have the Hidden Secrets of Masonry, and of course, my Symbols book.
Okay, fine. Well, Kathy knows what I have better than I do. Anyway, Spencer, did you have another question?
Yes. I have a book here from 1891 called Bible Readings for the Home Circle, and in it there's a Professor George Bush of Hebrew and Oriental Literature, and he claims that man has no living soul, that man and beast are all animated beings and creatures of habit, that all animals have the same basic functions. But Genesis 2:7 says God breathed into man the breath of life, and man became a living soul.
Amen to that. Well, I would probably not pay too much attention to what he has to say. He's probably educated far more beyond his intelligence, and he's probably burning in hell right now. Hey, thanks so much, Spencer.
Is he any
my hell booklet.
Is he any relation to George Bush?
I don't know. Do you know Kathy?
I have no idea, but he needs my hell booklet. That explains those type verses. They are
thank
my
you.
Booklet.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Right. Let's go to, we've got Herman calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a question. How would you respond to somebody who says that Masonry was founded by Solomon, that the Phoenician king helped to build the temple, and the symbology of the original Masons and the Knights Templar was rooted in the Bible, so it's not all bad?
All right, that's an excellent question. Dr. Burns, how would you respond to somebody who says something like that?
Well, first of all, it depends if you want to prove it or not. Now, many Masons will tell us that Masonry started in 1717, but again, I mentioned that those monitors claim, of course, that Solomon was the founder. You can't have it both ways. But even if, perchance, Solomon was, which we do not know, and I really, honestly doubt it. I really would doubt it. But the thing is, Masonry as an actual organization was founded in 1717. But if Solomon did perhaps found it, and like I said, I doubt it, we must remember that Solomon left the true Lord of Israel, and he had gone into the occult because of his occult wives. His wives were pagans from other areas, and he started to worship all these other gods. And the witches claimed Solomon as their founder. So that doesn't make Solomon a good founder, if he were.
And Herman, what I would simply point out is, I would sort of say, you have to understand where Masonry came from. According to Albert Pike, it came from the ancient mystery religions, and it traces its origin to the Gnostics, and it traces its organization to the mystery religions. And if you read my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, we go into that. Well, so, and that it has nothing to do with Christianity. It has to do with the ancient occult organizations, and specifically that long before the Templars, the Templars were, of course, 1100s, we're going back to the ancient Babylon and ancient Greece. And yes, Masonry does, at least these secret religions have been passed down through the ages. And of course, Masonry is one of the modern manifestations of this, right along with the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists and the New Age and the Lucius Trust and all of these secret or semi-secret organizations. So does that answer your question?
Yes, and again, I have a Mormon friend and who claims to serve Jesus Christ. He's very passionate about that. And when I pointed out the Masonic symbols within the temple structure, he said, again, that's part of their past history, but that they're focusing on Jesus Christ. Just look at the name on any LDS church, and they've just recently, last few years, doubled the size of the name Jesus Christ. So again,
okay.
How would you approach
okay, what you
like
do,
that?
First of all, you must ask him, who is your Jesus? Please define your Jesus. Now, they'll probably tell you he is the Savior. But then you ask them, just say, but don't you teach that Jesus is actually the spirit brother of Lucifer? If they are honest, they will say yes. They may not be honest with you. But if they are honest, they will have to admit that he was the spirit brother of Lucifer. You also can go to the Book of Mormon. Again, that is far from Scripture, but it does not teach any of their doctrines that they are teaching today. The Book of Mormon is against polygamy. And yet, if you read Mormon material, you find out, and again, they will deny this to a large extent, but their materials say that you really have to engage in polygamy to advance to godhood. And their God is only, I mean, Jesus actually was God's son through God going into Mary and having her through the regular conception as any human being. He is not the divine son of God. Ask them to explain a little more about their Jesus and then bring up these little things and just see if they'll be honest about it. And if you're interested, I have a book called Mormonism, Masonry, and Godhood that explains a lot of those issues.
You give me a call, Herman. I'll tell you how to get it. We'll get one for you. But, you know, the important thing is the Mason believes that as Christ was, we can become. As we are today, he once was. They believe that they can become gods. That, of course, is the antithesis of what the Christian believes. Any Mormon who, you know, has studied this believes he can become a god. That's what he's really striving for. And that's the basic fallacy.
And then we also have to know, as far as Mormonism, see that why they have the Masonic symbolism in there is because Joseph Smith himself was a Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And after he took the Masonic degrees, he put all this into the Mormon temple.
See, one of the questions that your program brings to mind, and I think this would be something in the minds of a lot of people, and that is the simple question, does it really matter? In other words, you could have people of all faiths listening to this program, good, quote-unquote, good Catholics and so on, who might know some of the pagan origins of these various symbols and things, but they would tell you that in their heart of hearts they pray to the true God. They're not pagans in the sense of what they may think ancient pagans were like. And again, I'm just giving you this, playing the devil's advocate. How would you answer them?
The Bible tells us that no man cometh unto the Father except through Jesus Christ. If we have accepted him, and I mean truly and honestly, sincerely accepted him as our Lord and Savior, he has promised to lead us into all truth. And a lot of these other things will fall by the wayside once we get into God's Word.
I am the
that
way.
That is the final analysis.
I am the way and the truth and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but through me. And if you're a Catholic and you believe in that, and you believe that Jesus Christ is Lord, why, you're going to be saved. And if you're a Protestant, you believe that. But the Mormon doesn't, because he believes he is going to be, going to become God. And of course, he believes that he's going to become God by his works. And that isn't what the Bible teaches.
And they also believe you have to have Joseph Smith's password, basically, to get into heaven. And they do not believe in a normal heaven like the Christian would believe. They believe in levels. And, of course, once you do get to the heaven, you'll become your own God and have your own planet, and you'll also father children just like Jesus or like God did. And it's just the whole cycle all over again. It's a totally different Jesus.
One of their statements is, we are saved by grace after all we can do.
That's right. A work salvation.
Anyway, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you. God bless both of you.
And
bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And let's go to Hans calling from Ohio. Hans, have you called before?
Yes. I wanted to ask if the Statue of Liberty is a Masonic symbol for the Mother Goddess Melis, who does have an owl as a symbol.
All right. What about the Statue of Liberty, Dr. Burns?
The Statue of Liberty is definitely a Masonic symbol. It was given to us from France by a Mason, it represents the goddess there. Which particular goddess, again, it doesn't much matter what name it is, because the names all go back to Babylon or Egypt or whatever, and it's just sainted in another guise, like I mentioned earlier. But yes, it is definitely a goddess symbol.
And the average American has no idea. They think that's a symbol of America. No, that's a Masonic symbol right there in the harbor in New York. Hey, thanks so much for calling. We've got Paul calling from Royal Oaks. Where's Royal Oaks, Paul?
North Monterey County.
All right, fine. Question or comment?
Dr. Cathy, I was calling about being baptized a Roman Catholic, and I tend to disagree with allowing homosexuals to be Catholic priests.
Well, you're a narrow-minded individual. I mean, don't you think we should? No, I'm just being ridiculous, you know. You're absolutely right, of course. Of course, the trouble is they have infiltrated the Catholic Church to destroy it, and they're doing a good job, don't you think?
Well, I was wondering what Dr. Cathy would have to...
What would you say about that, Cathy?
Not what I have to say. It's what the Bible says. It tells us it's an abomination, and nothing like that should be in the pulpit.
Amen to that. Anything else?
Amen, brother.
Oh. Okay.
Sister.
Thank you so much, Paul.
God bless.
Well, I'll tell you what, and you too. I'll tell you what, Cathy, I don't know when we've had so many calls coming in from all over the country, and I think that this isn't such an important subject, and I want to thank you so very much for writing this book. And it's Masonic and Occult Symbols Illustrated, includes 728 illustrations, and of course, even the caduceus, which is the symbol of medicine, a staff with two snakes twined around it. Why don't you quickly tell us what that's all about? You know, doctors have embraced that for years, but that is an occult symbol as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's the caduceus, or it's really a magic wand that has two snakes wrapped around it. You can see it if you go into most any doctor's office, really. It was really originally carried by the pagan god Mercury. And, of course, like I mentioned, you'll see it in the doctor's offices, whatever. But Mercury would use this caduceus to guide the souls of the dead to Hades, which would be hell. And he could control the living and the dead with it, or turn anything to gold. And there's one book that tells us, for the Romans, the caduceus served as a symbol of moral equilibrium and of good conduct. The wand represents power, the two snakes wisdom, the wings diligence, and the helmet is the emblem of lofty thoughts. According to esoteric Buddhism, the wand of the caduceus corresponds to the axis of the world, and the serpents refer to the force called Kundalini, which in Tantra's teaching sleeps coiled at the base of the backbone, a symbol of the evolutive power of pure energy. Of course, the caduceus later became an emblem, or it became the emblem of the supreme deity, and it's really a veiled symbol for the sex act, like a lot of the other symbols. And Blavatsky tells us that the serpents were ever the emblems of wisdom and prudence. And she said it's shown by the caduceus of mercy. And then she goes on, the two serpents entwined around the rod are phallic symbols of Jupiter and other gods who transform themselves into snakes for purposes of seducing goddesses. The serpent has ever been the symbol of the adept and of his powers of immortality and divine knowledge. It shows the dual power of the secret wisdom, the black and the white magic.
And of course, Madame Blavatsky herself was a Luciferian. Well, we're out of time. God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us. And our guest has been Dr. Cathy Burns. And if you'd like more information, we carry a number of her products. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Thanks so much, Cathy. Bye-bye.
Thank you, and God bless.
And you too. And of course, we are involved in a spiritual battle. We're going to war. We're going to find American boys dying here in the near future. And it's not just going to be on the streets of Baghdad and Basra and in Iraq. We're in for some very difficult times because the good people have not been involved. Well, pray for America. Pray for revival. Write your congressman and tell him the last thing we want is to get involved in a war in the Middle East. And then, of course, please pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
yes, you can always do a good job. She's a wonderful lady. Anyway, she's scared to death to come on our program.
She doesn't like death.
She's a great researcher, but she feels very ill at ease. She has everything all written out ahead of time. And so
everything she's saying, because she's reading it off of it, she's afraid to show.
She'll forget. Yeah. And she's just a wonderful source of information. If I just talk to her, and I very often talk to her, I mean, she can go on. She doesn't have any notes. She can talk. She gets on the radio. But she's so frightened. She said, we're going to do chapter 19. So, of course, I was just watching chapter 19. Because she knew, that was what she was going to have all prepared. She doesn't need it. But she's afraid she's going to say something or panic or something. Anyway, she's a lady. I'm just a human being.
What is that?